Hey, hope everyone's having a great weekend. I'm Tony Bruschi from the Hidden Killers podcast. This is our week in review, a look back at some of the most compelling moments in audio that we've experienced this past week. Brand new episodes start back up again Monday morning right here. Enjoy.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mana is joining us for this segment, and we're going to be talking about the Lori Vallow Daybell trial and what we've been witnessing thus far in this almost Halloween-ish case, and the magical thinking and the dark thinking and demons and zombies and all of that. I got to say, Bob, who is an amazing criminal defense attorney, by the way, and hosts Defense Diaries. You can check out that at defensediaries.com. Is that the prosecution is really making a good case for insanity here, when I know that is not the goal whatsoever.
Not only is it not the goal, it's not even a defense in Idaho.
No.
You can't bring the insanity defense out there. So it's like, you know why I love this case, man? And obviously, when I say I love it, I mean it from a lawyer's perspective.
Sure.
Obviously, the tragedy of the kids and Tammy and Charles all losing their lives, and maybe more.
Yeah.
It's hard to know, you know, but in the sense of this trial fascinates me because there's this intersection of religion and the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what's going to happen here, man, is that there's going to be this. So let me back up a little bit. When I say that there is no, as a defense attorney, I cannot put forth an affirmative defense of insanity.
Yes.
Okay. We're pleading not guilty by reason of insanity. What you can do in Idaho is you can bring in mental defect testimony as to the mens rea of the crime, meaning that you can say, look, my client didn't think that JJ was a human being. And the reason that I say human being is because you, as a prosecutor, have to prove each and every element of an offense. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the elements of an offense is that you caused the death of a human being. Okay. So for instance, what they could do during Vallow's case in chief and say, they could put a psychiatrist or a psychologist up there and say, okay, as far as what Lori Vallow literally believes, as she sits in this courtroom today, she still believes that her son, JJ, and her daughter, Tylee, were no longer human beings, that they were, in fact, demons. And she believed this completely, so that when she killed them, they can't meet that back, because they can't. She didn't have the specific intent of killing a human being. She thought that she was killing a demon. It's a kind of a weird niche, but it's one that exists. Like the Idaho Supreme Court, when they got rid of the death or the insanity defense, I think it was back in 92. They are the ones who kind of gave this. It was a little bit of a hypothetical talking about if somebody, say somebody kills somebody, but that they thought that they were a werewolf at the time that they caught them in their mind.
Surprise!
That person was a werewolf. They could introduce that,
yeah,
as evidence that they did not have the mens rea, the mental state to think that that was a human being. Therefore, it can be taken into consideration that they're not guilty, and the state can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they killed a human being as to the fact that this person didn't think it was a human being. Now, they then said, well, if it was a human being that the person thought was going to turn into a werewolf, but when they killed them, they were human, even though that they thought they were going to turn into a werewolf, that doesn't fit because they killed a human being. So the point being, man, this is going to get interesting, because in terms of how they're going to go about like putting this together, because in my estimation, Lori and Allison and I on our podcast are actually following this trial and doing on our docket. And y'all, after you're done listening to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, come and listen to us on Defense Diaries.
Yeah.
We're doing every witness, and you got two defense attorneys. They're going to be crushing this case. So check it out. It'll be interesting, including you, Tony.
Yes.
You'll find it interesting. So, but you know, what's going to end up happening, I think that it wasn't Chad that was the ringleader. Okay. No. I think that he had written the books. I think that without question, Lori was the one running the game. Like, he was the front man. When she found him, she realized immediately, that's the guy I need. That he is the guy. He is the guy I'm going to put in front, and I will be behind him with my marionette strings running the show. And that's exactly what I think. And Allison and I debate this, because Allison's like, well, no, he was the one writing the books. He was the one saying all that stuff. And I'm like, I don't care. She had already gotten to that point in her mind where she believed some of the things that he was saying was true before she even knew he existed. Mm-hmm. And when she met him, it like was like, boop, this is my guy. This is the guy that's going to be able to help me get to where I need to be. And, you know, for the state, we know what their theory of the case is, that she did this for money, sex, and power.
Sure.
Right. So the challenge is going to be, did Lori actually do it? Because she really believes wholeheartedly that the apocalypse is coming and that there's going to be 144,000 people on this planet that survive, and that she, number one, and then her man, Chad, are the two people at the top of the chain. You know, that, like, it is a fascinating case, man. And because it goes to, like, when you remember Waco.
Yeah,
we all remember Waco. You know, it's like when the feds came and, you know, they had that shootout, and it was gruesome and horrible. And then you start to ask those questions. There is a separation of church and state in this country, man. Mm-hmm. That the government cannot say, you know what, I think that your concept of religion, because look, the one thing that I know about religion, and I'm never besmirching anybody's faith, I'm all for it. But the one thing that I know is that no one knows what happens when we die.
Sure.
They're all theories, you know, and that's why they call it faith. Faith, people have faith that this is what happens when we go. This is the story that I'm hooking my wagon to, and I'm going to follow those rules because I think it's the right one, and I want to be in a position to go to heaven or whatever form of afterlife exists in whatever religion you follow. So, you know, the government, it's in the Constitution, man. They can't say, we find your theory of what happens when we die to be bunk, no matter how crazy it is. You know, so it's like that is going to come to the forefront in this case. And that happened in Waco after the massacre.
Sure.
You know, where that question became, look, we may not agree with David Koresh and, you know, his followers. They seem like a bunch of weirdos and, you know, they have bizarre notions. The question becomes, is it the government? We know the Constitution says the government cannot decide what is right and what is wrong when it comes to religion. It's freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it. So that is going to become a, like, I am so into this case. Like, way, like, I loved Murdoch. We all loved Murdoch. That's kind of your straightforward case. Yeah. This one has some much deeper philosophical, legal, religious, constitutional questions that are going to come to the forefront. And man, I'm here for it, you know?
And the prosecution initially saying this is a case about money, sex, and power. And extreme beliefs. It's certainly about extreme beliefs. That seems to be the main thing that's being argued here. Not even so much money and sex. I see those as being side notes, but the extreme beliefs. And when we're talking about extreme beliefs, as we were saying earlier, if she believed she was killing demons when she killed her kids, it would essentially, if that were to be the argument, it's an acknowledgement that she killed her kids. But she thought they were demons. In terms of the law, in terms of penalty for that, even if she did 100% believe she was killing demons, does it matter at all what she thought she was doing when it comes down to the fact that she physically did those actions, if she did?
That's what I was just explaining. Yes, it could. In Idaho, even though they don't have the insanity defense, you can attack the mens rea. By exactly what I was just saying. Yes,
yeah,
she didn't think, if she legitimately thought that she, and when I say she, I mean Alex. I have no doubt Alex was the one that was doing all these killings.
Sure.
So, you know, and it was Chad and Lori that were, you know, basically, because like, look, the argument as to Alex is this kid, her brother, he bought into this hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. He absolutely believed that the only way he was going to become one of the exalted, which is one of the 144,000 that survives the apocalypse and is here for the second coming, is by making sure that he follows the rules. And one of the rules under this kind of like subsect of LDS that Chad and Lori had kind of started to build, mm-hmm. and Chad had been writing about in his books with, you know, the light and darkness scale. And, you know, the fact that, you know, people, once they're in, you know, once they're taken over by the demon, the person is no longer, the living soul is no longer there. The demon has taken over every part of that person's body and mind. Because if I'm the defense, that's who I'm pointing at all day, mm-hmm. you know, and then it became, because number one, he's dead. You know, they can point the finger. It's easiest to point the finger to the guy who's not here to defend himself. Right.
Sure.
But if they can show that he believed that wholeheartedly, that they did not have to give him instructions, because for Lori, this is a case of, was she manipulating? Did she cause either Chad or Alex to do it? Did she say, I need you to do this? Like, they have to be able to meet that burden to show that mm-hmm. it went, that there was some kind of affirmative act wherein she said, look, I need you to get rid of JJ. I need you to get rid of Ty Lee. It's the only way that we're going to be able to survive to get through this, you know, where we're exalted, you know, and then he buys it. Short of that, I'm arguing, look, Alex did this on his own accord. He believed with all of his heart, everything that they were preaching to him. He was indoctrinated, mm-hmm. and that they didn't have to tell him anything. As soon as the words, JJ has a demon, Charles has a demon, Ty Lee is a demon, and yeah. Tammy is a demon, he took it from there without them having to say anything, because he knew what he had to do in order for them to make it to the exalted status. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This case is crazy. It's so
I know.
Crazy.
I mean, it is. And we talk about her pulling strings, and that's an interesting
way. I call her the puppet master. That's my nickname.
Yeah, the question about that, though, is that some people are puppet masters, and they know they have puppets on their hand, and they know that they move their hand this way, that way, the puppet's going to do this or that. Essentially, yeah, she had that power over these people in her life, but did she know she was the puppet master of these people, or was she?
Yeah, that's not the question. The question is, yes, she did.
She did?
The question is, did she believe?
That's it. Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. Did she believe that what she was talking about? Was she literally hearing voices in her head? In reality, she's having this experience and then saying this to people that they're this vision and that vision, you know, or were these more concocted, I want things to go this way, so I'm going to say these things because they believe it within this sort of doctrine, if you will.
Man, I don't know. Like, I've never had the opportunity to talk with her. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I believe, look, when you listen to Kay Woodcock's testimony about how Lori was prior to 2018, mm-hmm. leading up to 2018, before she even met Chad, like, you know, she was starting to have thoughts that were outside the realm of regular LDS tenants. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like she wasn't sick, because when she had met Melanie Gibbs, she had told Melanie before they had gone to this trip to where she met Chad in October, that she had had a visitation with Jesus.
Yeah.
And that Jesus told her that she was a god.
Yeah.
So she's already there. Before Chad even exists as a notion in her mind, Kay said that she was incredibly nurturing, like just a down to earth, great woman that they chatted, they talked. There wasn't a day that went by that they didn't talk or text on the phone, that they had like, and then all of a sudden she wasn't, you know, it was almost like instantaneous, which to me, when something like that happens, it's almost always a sign of some kind of mental illness.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like the mind doesn't work like that. You know, like you can't just, you know, they can't teach old dogs new tricks, right, man? And she's like, what, 48, 49 years old. So at that point, like she's no spring chicken. You know, this is very late in life for her to have like this epiphany out of nowhere. I tend to think that she believes. I think she's sitting in that courtroom And I think that she thinks at the end of days, she's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Because she did what she had to do to make sure that she's exalted. Like, I honestly, like, when you kind of look at her face and she just sits there, like, with a blank stare, kind of like almost, I wouldn't call it a smirk, but just kind of a, like a look of being content, mm-hmm. which is the feeling I owe. Like, every time I see a picture of her, I'm like, man, she does not look like a woman who is going wild for her life.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's like, And the tough thing for the state is, how do they prove it? They can't get in her head.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get that interview of her where she's sitting, you know, cross-legged in her yoga pants, looking as zenny as you can get, you know, looks like she's like meditating in between the questions, man. I mean, like, she's something else, you know, and I don't know what she is.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to think that she believes every bit of it.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Me and Bob are going to keep talking the Lori Vallow Daybell case. We got more to dig into and analyze, so keep it here. That segment's coming up in just a little bit today. So don't miss that. Press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts. If you want an ad-free experience of the show, you can get it through Apple Podcasts. Go ahead and check that out. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.